Hello, everybody. Recording live from somewhere.
Lord of the mercy. All night, Sunday, Central. Follow me now. Listen, say, I think it's a rolling hip hop. Say, Jay Rolls, it's a rolling hip hop. Redefinition, say, you're rolling.
Hello, listeners. Thank you for tuning in to the Created for Marketers by Marketers podcast. My name is Billy Luizu, and we've been working hard to find marketing topics which will help you level up your skills and that will blow your mind. Today is episode 9 of season 3, and the topic for today is almost bankrupt to breakthrough, the 3 T's for transforming your business. We'll be discussing the turnaround story of beloved family business Bevel's Jewelers and the lessons learned along the way to completely transform its outlook, its results, and its obsession around being customer centric. My guest for today is Michelle Stanton, the former CEO of her family's 80-year-old business, Bevel's Jewelers. Michelle led the company out of receivership, driving exceptional growth and orchestrating a lucrative sale to a global multinational. Michelle today is the founder and CEO of Complete Success, where she uses her expertise to empower people to achieve exceptional results through her speaking, teaching, and coaching programs. She is a true student of leadership and has dedicated over 10,000 hours to her craft. Good morning, Michelle. How are you?
I'm great, Billy, and thank you for that gorgeous introduction.
Oh, it speaks for itself. I've had the pleasure of working with you during your time at Bevel's on the board at Life Changer, and excited to have this conversation with you. I think it's been building up to this conversation, and I'm excited to have you on. And before we jump in, I wanted to ask you the most important question of the podcast, which is where I judge you quite harshly. Marketers and music, what music do you listen to when you work, or just favorite album overall?
Well, I was thinking about this question, and my answer is I love to be able to be in harmony and feel like I'm in a calm state when I'm working. And my nephew, Cameron Siegel, does his own music and creates his own piano music, and it is so magnificent to listen to. So I'm going to give him a plug.
He's great plug.
A lot of followers now, and it just soothes the soul is the best way to describe it.
Yeah, doesn't it? I've got him on Instagram, and I listen to him on Spotify as well. And great plug, because I think the classical music, or just the way he can make you enter a different realm through his music. Like, there was one he put up around, like, you know, feeling like you're in France or something, and I listened to it and I'm like, close my eyes, I'm like, oh my god, I'm in France. Very talented. Great plug.
A funny story with that, when I was having an operation, I asked the surgeons to play the music while I was in surgery, and it was a long surgery, and they came out and said they had never felt more relaxed and not as fatigued after that surgery. And so they committed to playing it to all their patients.
Wow. Yeah, it's classical. It's soul touching. It's really impressive. And he's a Melbourne boy, right? So
he is indeed.
Always good for our local talent. Michelle, this is, the topic here of, I was pretty pointy, right? Almost bankrupt to breakthrough. And the Bevel story is fascinating, and your story alone. You know, I want you to give me a bit of a brief introduction on you, what you do. Yeah, I'm going to say why this topic is relevant to you, but of course you're the CEO. So a little bit of background introduction on yourself and this topic, please.
I'll give you a bit of a background to my childhood and growing up in a family business. So I, grew up in Melbourne with a loving family, had a very abundant life. But also very normal. We would go to summer camp. I would, get bullied on the bus stop by people. I never knew what to wear to school, and went to university studying marketing and psychology for your listeners. But what was different was I grew up in a family business, and it was a very successful national jewellery chain. And, my grandparents started it in 1934. And it was really a household name in where we lived, and we were serving over 300,000 customers a year. So, it had some real size and volume to it. And I, like all family businesses, we talked Bevel's shop all the time, at breakfast, lunch, dinner, on holidays. It was the thing that was central to our family, as well as doing great activities. I was that 5-year-old who I loved it. I would sneak into my dad's office and write marketing campaigns like, "Don't be stupid, go and shop at Bevilles," and wonderful things like that.
Life's short, buy the earrings.
Yes, exactly. So, growing up, I got to work, had the opportunity to work in all aspects of the business, and I loved it. I loved the buying, I loved the marketing, I loved the stores. I even enjoyed the finances, except for when we were losing a lot of money. And I knew the business intimately, but I was working very hard, like 70 hours a week. And I didn't mind because I loved it so much, and so did my family. It was just, what we did. And in 2009, when I was about 40, my brother and my father elected me to become the CEO of the business and take over the reins for my father. And on the outside, that looked like a very logical decision. I knew the business, I loved it. It was something that I was so passionate about. But on the inside, it was a completely different story. And I was not ready. I don't know if you can relate to this, where you've got all this outer success, you look like you know what you're doing, people look up to you to feel like you're the authority, and on the inside is a completely different story. You're feeling like you're a fraud, you're going to be found out.
Yeah,
Can you
100%.
relate?
Oh my God, can I relate? Yeah, it's funny. Like I still do quite a bit of public speaking, and every time before I get up on stage, I have to remind myself, why does everyone want to listen to me speak? What do I know that these people don't? And it's sometimes a daily occurrence. But I think it's always good to remind yourself the amount of work you've done leading up until this point. And yeah. If you can't say nice words about yourself, no one else will. That's a good place to start.
So in that debilitating state that I was in, it was really all consuming. I couldn't make any decisions. I had kind of hidden over the years with between my brother and my father and me of deferring all decision making to them in a very sneaky way. And when I became CEO, I actually had to start making decisions for myself. And I didn't know how. And each decision, no matter how small or big, was petrifying. And I made some really bad ones at that time, and including bringing in a new look and feel for the business and the stores. And that included a black, heavy, ugly looking marketing, and the store format was horrible, and our customers hated it. And between my self-doubt and this, poor marketing decision, between 2009 and the GFC and other things happening, and 2013, I had managed under my leadership to take a very thriving, prosperous, profitable business to losing millions of dollars,
Oh my gosh.
which was horrific.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I think I remember the branding now that you talk about it, the that you're revolving around. That's amazing that well, it's amazing. It's kind of fascinating to hear you talk about that now in hindsight, and then getting to 2013 and going having the foresight in figuring out how to get yourself out of it.
Well, I think when you really get in trouble, things start to arise to help you to either sink or swim. And in 2013, with the pressure of losing so much money in the business every year, the banks, as they do, gave me 90 days to come up with $5 million. Otherwise, they
Oh,
were going to put the business into bankruptcy.
the mafia.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh my God, did you sleep for those 90 days? Oh.
Well, the next morning I was walking into my dressing room. I'm in my pajamas and UGG boots, and just distraught that I had led this, this terrible result. And as I walked into the dressing room, I remember this. I just fell to the ground I was bereft with tears that would just be flooding out of every part of me, and I couldn't believe that I had been the one who is causing this business, that was 80 years old at the time, to fail. But even bigger than that was that, people were going to lose millions of dollars, suppliers, people who believed in me, and also that the people who trusted me, my team, were going to lose their jobs. And as I lied there on the floor, my 7-year-old son, who had never seen me cry at that time, I was one of those brave, heroic mums, came up, leaned down, and said to me, "Mummy, what's wrong?" And I, told him the story. And something rose up inside of me, Billy. It was like this lioness, hold of me, and literally, handle by handle on the dressing room table, pulled me up onto my knees. And I looked at my son and I said to him, "You know what, sweetie? This is not going to be your story or my story." And in that moment, somehow I just resolved that I was going to find a way. And even though I had been trying to find a way, I was desperate. I was obsessed at, trying to find an answer through this. There was something that shifted in that moment. And remarkably, with a miracle, which is a whole nother story, I did find an angel investor who gave me that money, and I was able to pay off the banks within that 90 days. However, what that did was give me a little highway to come up
That's
with a
right.
way to transform the business, because it was still losing millions of dollars. That didn't fix it. It just fixed the banks.
That's right.
And so I was fortunate enough with an amazing team behind me. I came across an incredible marketing company who really spent the time getting to know me and the brand, and came up with a new look and feel for the brand and the stores. And what their process was amazing. And I had 9 months to do a test in two stores. And what happened was the response was incredible by our customers. We had them lined up down the hallway of the shopping centers. And what happened by that Christmas, these two stores did really well, but the rest of the business was still losing money. And I got to the end of the freeway and the runway, and I had to face some really loud music and make some big decisions.
Oh, of course. It's good that you had the two stores, almost pilot stores, to show what could be if we could scale that.
Yes.
And you had almost like you call you had you almost had the code or the system and the playbook of what can we do to roll this out.
Without that, I don't think the rest of the story could have happened, because we didn't have a vision for what the new business could look like, where this gave us so much hope, faith, and a vision to move forward.
And Michelle, what was the scale at that point in time? How many stores?
30.
There you go. Right. Roll it out in front of another 28. One of the things, and we talk about your kind of three T's for transforming the business, for 4 years, right? From break even to breakthrough, which led to the end of the story around the sale of Bevels. Your first kind of T that you speak quite high, quite a lot about is having to transform yourself, whether that's the lioness process of getting yourself up off the floor and saying, I'm going to fix this, to creating your own system for how you do that. Can you talk me through that? Because I find it a lot of people don't think about fixing yourself first. Look at fixing the problem, but sometimes looking introspectively and saying, this is never going to be successful if I can't get my head in the right place.
Well, that's right. Well, what happened at that point in time was that the business was losing money, and in the end, I did have to put it into voluntary administration and or Chapter 11 in bankruptcy. But because we had hope of a new way to take the business forward, the family made a decision to buy back the business out of voluntary administration, pay back all of our creditors, and go again.
Hey, wow. How did that
Which
feel at
was,
that point in time?
well, I would say it was empowering, it was frightening, it was hard work, because I made the commitment post the restructure to actually pay back millions of dollars to the creditors. I always wanted to be able to walk down the aisles of the jewelry trade shows and feel proud. So we were paying out so much money, trying to convert the stores to the new look and feel, and literally making payroll every week for 4 years was a challenge. And
Oh
it
yeah,
was
month by month. Great month. Well, that was a tough one.
Everything at that.
Yeah.
So it was at that point, after 4 years, we changed the stores, we were growing the business, but I could, but the business was still only breaking even. And I thought to myself, we're doing so much right, but if we're not creating the results that, you know, we could be creating, it's got to be coming from the inside, from me. And if I
Right.
change that, then everything else will change. And the moment I realized that, I can tell you, I was dancing on my bed, singing at the top of my voice, going, "Oh my goodness, my mind is creating these results. All I have to do is change my mind and how I think about myself. I can change anything." And that seemed a lot easier to do than trying to, you know, pull a business out of a bankruptcy. So I devoted and really dedicated myself to study under the best of the best of, you know, how results are created, how to transform yourself and businesses, and applied myself. Like, I wanted to sit at the heels of the best. So I did that and still do that today. And what I discovered there was really a code to transform any situation, and that can be personal, health, relationships, and business. And the first part of that code is transforming yourself.
Right.
So
See.
a good way to, sorry.
No, I was just saying, I see how you got there now in regards to buying the business back and dancing on your bed and coming up with this kind of, moment of power and trusting, changing myself first. And yeah, just sorry, jump back in.
Well, it was like the what came to me, what I realized in this transformation is, you know, when you're sitting at a movie and you're watching a horror movie and you want to actually go up to the screen on the movie and kind of say, "Stop, stop, stop." And I had been sitting in this horror movie for like 10 years, even though it was changing, I still couldn't change the fundamentals and embrace abundance and profitability. And when I started to do this study, I realized that the screen, which is my life, isn't on the screen. It's coming from the film that's coming through the projector onto the screen. And so if I want to change the story of my life, I actually have to change the film that's coming through the projector. And this study really helped me understand that I need to, you know, change my self-image first. I needed to see myself as a, you know, a world-class leader, which is not the story that I've been telling myself for many, many years. I had to get rid of all the shame and the guilt and the fear of the business going into bankruptcy again, because we were so close on break even. Every day, you know, I had this fear in my stomach that I was not only going to do it once, but I was going to do it twice, which would be even way worse. So, you know, that process was amazing. And what I really discovered there was that if I have a vision for the business and for myself, living a what I call much more of a vision-driven life, rather than looking at the conditions that are not the ones that I like, I can change my energy and I can change my frequency and what I'm observing and what I'm spending my time on. And as I did that, nothing had changed on the outside, but I was changing on the inside. I could feel myself, you know, relaxing more, feeling more abundant, making better, more confident decisions, and life just got easier.
Did you feel at that point in time changing your vision? And I think one of the key things you mentioned is knowing where to apply yourself or knowing where to invest your energy. Did that simplify things quite a lot for
It
you?
did.
Yeah.
It did. Because as I got more in harmony with, you know, seeing myself as a great leader and one who can make a difference and bringing my authentic self to the bevels, it put me on, I started asking different questions. You know, it's like, well, what is the key thing that we could do that would really help us take a quantum leap rather than spending our time, my time worrying about, you know, the bills that we've got to pay, which would then just send me into a spin. I started asking different questions, and then, of course, you start to receive different answers and have more confidence in taking those decisions.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, fascinating. It's such a, I mean, it sounds like such a simple mind shift, but you're right. First, being confident in your your identity, being confident in the vision, simplifying your direction allows you to make just the decisions which are going to make significant impact, not quite tactical in nature, which just move the needle ever so slightly.
Absolutely. And really, that was the breakthrough that happened from those 4 years of breaking even to starting to make a significant profit. And I remember just before, as this breakthrough was happening for me, I would look at the figures, the sales, they were live. So I could see them all the time. And I probably looked at them, I think maybe 500 times a day. And sometimes I would be looking at it, and I think more times than often when I would be doing it, I could feel myself being like covering my eyes. I would be scared to be looking at them. And as I was starting to learn this work, I realized, well, my gosh, I'm doing this behavior every day of saying, I'm scared of looking at the numbers. They're going to be bad. I mean, that's my intention as I'm looking at it, because that's how I'm feeling. And I decided, well, I'm just going to give praise and gratitude to all the customers who are buying from us and feeling really wonderful no matter what the number is, because I'm in control of that. And about 3 short weeks later, my brother, who was sitting right in front of me doing the same thing with the same energy, looking at the figures, many, many times a day, comes in to me, and he knew I was kind of doing this work, and said to me, have you done something? Are you doing something different? And I said, maybe. And he said, what is it? And so I said, well, join me in the process. That would be, I don't have to battle you. We can do it together. And he did as well.
You speak a lot about befriending fear, and it's almost like that mind shift at that point in time. You're like, oh my God, we expected a bigger day or a bigger hour or a bigger minute or a bigger second, depending on how often you were looking at the sales, to being grateful for the fact people were prioritizing spending their time and their dollars in at Bevels at that point in time. Again, such a simple mind shift, but waking up being thankful and being grateful as opposed to expecting and wanting more just changes your outlook. It's super insightful. So after that point in time, was it still 500 times a day that you were looking at the sales, or did you start
No,
to be confident in that and look at it less time?
definitely I did, and definitely coming with way more gratitude. I would just, as I was doing it, I would have a different feeling in my mind, and that just shifted everything. And I didn't need to check all the time because I wasn't doing it out of fear.
And once you've gone and transformed yourself, the next application for what you call the second T is putting that energy into transforming your team.
Yes.
You can impact one, you impact many. Take me through the thinking there as to how that became the next kind of big wave inside of the story.
Well, I realized, very obviously, that I can't achieve great success without an amazing team. And my team, who many of them had been through the voluntary administration, the bankruptcy, they were feeling the same thing. It would only take a few days of sales or a week of sales that they would be down. I could feel the panic in the entire organization that we were going to go down again. And, people knew that we were managing the cash flow very tightly, I suppose is a nice way to put it. And so a week of down sales, the panic would be there. And so I thought, well, not only do I need to change the thinking and mindset of my team, of myself, I need to do it with my team as well. And with the brilliance of the marketing or new direction of Bevels, which was all about helping people feel fabulous, and internally we called it that we are being fabulous so
Oh
that we can
yeah,
help customers feel fabulous.
I embrace that. The moment I walked
Yeah, me too.
into your boardroom and I saw it on the wall, I was like, "That's great. How do I be fabulous too?"
That's right. And our purpose was actually to inspire, build confidence, and transform people's lives through beautiful jewelry. And so that was, I mean, my number one call in life is actually to do that. And so the marketing company was able to capture me and the business and put it all together. So what I was able to do, and as a business, we implemented systematically ways to help grow our people's confidence. And their belief in themselves, their belief in the customers and the why we were here. And together we shifted the energy and the mindset of my team so that it became absolutely natural for them to want to, go out and make a difference in the world, help our customers, but help increase their belief in themselves as well.
So then you created a way or a mechanism to get your team and everybody within that, within your stores and within your headquarters to live and breathe those values.
We did. And some of them, I mean, they were all quirky and we didn't have much money. So it was all, low cost ways of making a difference and living into the values. But we would start every meeting with either catching ourselves being fabulous because it's raising our own energy and confidence, or catching someone else being fabulous. We had an intranet within the business, and I would ask the team to post photos of our customers, buying beautiful jewelry with their smiles, but also to tell the story of transformation, the why behind this particular piece of jewelry, why they're celebrating themselves or someone else. And I could gauge, this was actually my number one lead indicator to the health of the business, was how many posts were being made, the quality of the intent behind them, and the amount of celebration and acknowledgement of other people to the person who made the post. And we would literally have, 40 or 50 of them a day. And if it dropped off, the sales were dropping off. And all we needed to do was amplify the celebration of others and the giving energy. And within a day, the sales would come back up.
How's that? It's almost like you've the intranet giving people permission to like post their perspective on a fabulous moment, where someone's buying jewelry or just, something happening in one of your stores was a was an indicator of the success of the business on that day. I mean, we're going to jump into that a little bit later on your philosophy around leading and lagging indicators. Something as simple as that being great, posting a photo into your intranet. Had direct correlation. I mean, I can see why, because if you're living and breathing the values of the business and being mindful of celebrating that moment, of course, that means a more successful day for everyone.
It does. I mean, it goes to the philosophy. Most people think it's have, do, be. When we have the results, we will do the celebration and we'll be happy. But really, it's actually be, do, have. We have to be the person who's celebrating and welcoming, incredible results. We do the action by celebrating it and posting it and acknowledging each other, and then we have the results.
Yeah, you spoke last time we spoke. You mentioned about I love the idea of just low cost, by the way, because some of these things don't have to be expensive to generate culture in a business. You had a bell in the office. You had ringing the bells, and I think I remember seeing them in the middle of the boardroom.
They were everywhere. I even gave them to my suppliers. So ringing the bells was such an important part of many, many cultures. We celebrate the bells when people get married, and so we wanted to have we had bells on everyone's desk. We had bells all throughout the stores, and when you had a win, something that you were proud of, it could be really small. You rang your bell, and the people around you would ring the bell back. And the more bells that were ringing, the higher the vibration of the business, and the more that people were being proud and wanting to, create better results for themselves and for the company, and the greater the success. So it was also one of my lead indicators. If there weren't enough bells ringing, if I couldn't hear the bells ringing as I came down the escalators into the shopping center, I knew that the sales weren't there. But if they were, I knew we were having a fantastic day. So my passion for the bells was incredible. And our suppliers would ring the bells when they come out with designs that they loved. It became very infectious.
Yeah, the sound becomes the action too. Like it's just repetition. I mean, I've seen that very much in sales culture or in software companies where, you book a meeting or a customer launches their first campaign or they have a successful day. We don't have the bells, but we want people walk around and give each other a high five or they say something out loud. I'm going to try and incorporate something like that in the office. You've given me a couple of ideas there. So, what else? Was there anything else that culturally you brought in to drive and kind of stimulate the team?
Yeah, Well, one of them was what we called HASUFU, which stands for HA for happiness, SU for success, and FU for fun. And this was a way for publicly for the team, for anyone in the team to catch someone else being fabulous, living into a value. And so we would do this on Zoom or publicly in the office, whichever was appropriate. And you know, would be saying my HASUFU today would be going to someone so, not in my own team, for living into the value of whichever one, and this is what they did. And we would do that every week. And so it was the team catching each other, being fabulous, living into the values, and really bringing the values to life.
Hasufu. Yeah, love it.
HASUFU.
Love it. Love it. That's fantastic. Happiness, success, and fun, and rewarding those who you see be happy, or those be fabulous, should I say. Did you
Well,
find, sorry, what were
sorry,
you
but
saying?
I was just going to say that the beautiful thing about that, it was not me doing it. It was being recognized by your team. And people would post them up. They would have them all by their wall and stick them up. It was something they were proud of, you know, but they wanted to be caught being fabulous by their team.
Yeah, I can. I look. I say, like, there's lots of companies I've worked for who haven't done that kind of empowering the team to post on Slack or send an email around, you know, looking at someone in the business and saying, I think they're representing these values. I will say that the Parity, where I work today, we have a whole Slack channel dedicated to that, and there are certain
Fantastic.
values that we congratulate, and it's, you know, build for durability, or making something better for tomorrow, or making something better today. And once you can, like you talk about, codify those things, you look for those things in the day-to-day work and you appreciate them, and then you want to share them, you know, to be, you know, so other people are aware of some of those, you know, small but very powerful things that have happened in your day, and being grateful for that. So I was wondering what Hasufu stands for, and we have to probably codify our own little word now. Did you find that there was commercial incentivizations that you could put into driving team as well? Like bonuses, as an example.
It was a big passion of mine. I mean, I wanted to be able to help my team do, you know, send their kids to school, go on the holidays. It was about actually empowering my team to really enjoy financial freedom as well as delivering the results for the business. And so we had many very lucrative incentives for our team and on performance. And I mean, so much so that I said to the shareholders, I was thinking about this morning, for the first 5 years, there was no distributions to shareholders. And but there were many, you know, into the millions of distribution to our team. And I kept saying to them, you just trust me on this. As we invest and work with our team and help them build their confidence to achieve extraordinary results, in return, we will receive everything that we, you know, dreamed of and even more. And in the beginning, one of the things I did was not only put these incentives in that were for the sales team, I had a company-wide incentive as well when we reached a particular profitability. And what that did was allow the people who went on the sale, you know, where it's easy to measure a sales call and you get the profit there. So everyone had some involvement and everyone was clear on the goal of the business. And that really helped to drive performance. But it was all before the shareholders. It was really putting our people first, allowing them to see what it tastes like, what it feels like to be on the receiving end of achieving goals. And as we stretch those goals to lead to more profit, it then, you know, became this self-fulfilling prophecy. But they had to first believe that they were actually going to be a part of it. It was no use saying we're, you know, break even and you'll start earning money when we get to you know, $2 million profit. And everyone's like, well, that's never going to
Good
happen.
luck. Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah.
So that was very, very imperative, and we talked about it. But what it also did was gave transparency across the business about the challenges that we were facing, why we needed to, you know, deliver profit and allow for those conversations and to educate them as well.
Yeah, and I think that's a it's a great way. I mean, keeping your shareholders at bay and saying, "Hey, trust me on this," would have been the tough conversation. Putting in a bonus scheme to incentivize people to, you achieve certain milestones, which are achievable. This is the reward. I'm sure that plus the values, would have just absolutely accelerated performance. I think it's also important. One thing I noticed from visiting a lot of your and meeting a lot of the team at Bevels is, your customer obsession was real. So it wasn't just, selling product, it was helping people buy, which was a very key difference for the stores I went to. I found that they were absolutely customer obsessed, to the point where a lot of them had their own little black books of people that would come through the stores, information about their customers that created such personal relationships. And it was not pushed on them. They just genuinely were lovely people that you were recruiting and that were living by the values and wanted to be customer obsessed. How did you enable that, and how did you find and recruit people that just, embraced your values? Because as a business leader myself, the hardest challenge is scaling and recruiting and building a team that aligns to all of those great incentives that you've positioned.
It's a great question, and I think it was, one of the things I was very obsessed about, because I think that when you really nurture, help people grow and expand, and love them, for them being their best version of them and what they can do for themselves and for the customers and for the business, and it's all out of authenticity and genuineness, it's natural. This is, it's completely natural. You're not having to force great customer service and being passionate about customers, because they're receiving it on the inside, through themselves and praising themselves, but also through the recognition and being seen in the business. So it wasn't something like I had to say, be passionate about our customers. It was us being passionate about our team. And of course, people who didn't, there were people who came into the business, were recruited, who saw the bells and pretty much walked out the next day saying, I'm not doing this,
That's not me.
these things, that's not me. But when we realized that, we realized in the interviews we needed to make sure that they were a better fit.
Yeah, that's it.
But we became like a magnet for attracting great people. You could feel the energy. People were like, I want to have that in my life. I want to work for an organization like that. So good people never left, and or rarely left. And we started attracting amazing people into the business. And it was all of this like culture from the inside and truly living it, living, breathing it. I did videos every day for 3 years, 5-minute videos, just moments of inspiration, helping them think differently, how to be different. And with themselves and with customers, and it was all one thing happening, and it was just something great.
Yeah, recruiting is such an important part. And I love how you say you didn't have to force it on people, but it became part of your recruiting process to make sure they were a culture fit. And that saves everybody time. So T1, transform yourself from the inside. T2, transform your team. Talk me through the last T, transforming the outside. I'm interested to hear now, how did you put things into practice and transform everything else?
Yes, so there are many parts to this, and it's no one thing. So clearly, having transforming the store design and the marketing of the business and a brand that our customers really related to was a critical step. Having that right, so we went about that, but bringing it to life. So it wasn't just something that was in the cupboard.
That's right.
The next was really investing in our CRM, our loyalty club, which was a really big loyalty club, our online sales, our internet, our website, and bringing in a masterful team, including people like yourself, internally and externally, to help us create that. But also, we had a there was a lot of sacred cows in the jewelry industry. It was a very catalog driven industry. I mean, at one point, We were producing 12 to 14 catalogs a year and distributing them to a million households every time.
Yeah, wow.
It was a beast of work and a beast of money and a beast of paper. And I really felt like that, customers were no longer responding to it. And yet all the other competitors were doing it. And it was a bit about, getting rid of the things that we thought we had to have and allowing the freedom to invest in the areas that were, way more empowering, way more freeing, and that customers resonated with. So
Yeah.
making those kind of decisions freed up business.
But Michelle, if you stop printing catalogs, your sales are going to halve. I'm sure you probably heard
No.
that from the outside, didn't you?
Absolutely. Well, that's where number one comes into it, because you have to really believe in a different possibility, because the
Correct.
fear is so great and the evidence has always been that. But if you have a different dream, you have to be able to back yourself. Now, I can assure you, when it was that decision, I really didn't have the support of anyone on my team
Oh, I
because everyone
bet.
believed in it.
Yeah, well, it'd been like you said, the sacred cow for so long. 50% of my advertising works. I just don't know which part. And it's like it's definitely the catalogs. I remember the launch of the e-commerce when you were launching e-commerce or when you were trying to revamp your website. A lot of your philosophy was we want to take the physical store and the service and the how we guide people and help people buy. How do we bring that online? And you were very much a thought leader in the space of guided selling online. So it wasn't just about the way you displayed the product, it was the way you helped, people find a gift for mum or find a watch for dad, or match some earrings to your bracelet. So just the way you were thinking about navigating online definitely still stayed true to the service you were trying to give customers in store.
Yes, and I would say that I was very fortunate because some of my great decisions was bringing in a master marketer into the business as my GM and a master online person who was head of GM of online sales. And between the two of them, they made my life very, very easy.
It's a combination of, of those. The shop has started to change, I'm sure. You went from, and some of your stores were so open, so welcoming. I remember there was one in particular that I visited, which is one of the flagship stores, and it was alluring. Like you walk past it, and you can't help but walk in and want to have a look and. The team was so helpful in definitely helping me look. I don't think at that time they realized I consulted for Bevels, and they didn't give me great service just because they knew that they definitely were there to help. So interesting. I want to dive into the leading indicators and lagging indicators of what you would look at to say, we drive these things, we drive this activity. I know that we were going to hit our sales targets, or we're going to exceed those. What were some of those indicators, which you felt were unique to you, or just that you kind of hung your hat on to say these are the things we're going to drive and influence moving forward?
It was such a breakthrough for me and the business when we spent more of our time looking at the lead indicators rather than worrying about the lag indicators. So, how do we deliver profitability or more sales? It's a lag indicator. And it's
Correct.
not that we paid a lot of attention to it, but you couldn't obsess about that. That was something that's already happened. It's looking at the things that were driving those results. And through an incredible book, which was The Four Disciplines of Execution, a fantastic book, and it became my Bible, literally. It helped me understand, and as a business, we discovered what really are the drivers of creating success at a transactional level. And we came up with three main ones. And so we discovered that in any week when the business makes the budget, 50% of the team have reached their own budget. Didn't actually require 100% of the team, it required 50% of the team. So then we went and looked at, we'll go, well, what's predictable thing that's happening for the people who are making budget that is different to the people who are not? And what we found out, it was that these people would do, one sale a week to customers to help them buy a higher value item by introducing and helping them with take-home finance options. Because, for our customers, they didn't necessarily have thousands of dollars in their pocket to just be able to spend on things. They needed the help of finance options to help create that dream and bring it to life. And so there was a very clear distinction between the people who made budget and the people who didn't. And so we realized that, rather than just seeing this as a tool, it was really the enabler. But people would, say, well, I'm scared of doing it or offering it, in terms of our team. And so what we did was focused on not how many yeses you were getting, but how many what we called no's that you were getting. And we actually had jars on the every counter which had silver rock pebbles and gold pebbles. And what I wanted to see was how many silver pebbles, which was how many no's you were getting. Because, the law is that, if you do something enough, you'll get better at it, you'll build more confidence, and you'll find ways to tweak it to resonate more with the customer. And I wanted to see the jars of the no's, and that's what we started celebrating. And it took the fear away from our customers. And as soon as we did that, we had more and more people achieving their weekly targets, which of course then led to the stores, the store and the business reaching its target. So we focused our attention on the real lead indicator
How's
that
that?
led to the successes, as an example.
Oh, I can so relate with that. And I always say to our team, it's not all the yeses and nos, it's the maybes that kill you, because you want to get to that no as quickly as possible, right? Because it's like you said, it's a leading indicator for you to, okay, that's one tick, you know. So you got to sometimes embrace the nos, as weird as that sounds. But the more no's you get, there's a yes just around the corner.
That's exactly right. And, encouraging it made people celebrate that they had a no rather than fearing. So that was it. That was so significant for the business. And the other two key components that shifted and changed the business was a focus on two things. One, raising our average sale. So at the time of the restructure, or the voluntary administration, our business average sale was around $70. By 2013, it was $280.
Almost times four.
So we did that in multiple ways. It was improving the confidence of our team, ha having them, feel like they've got more self-belief and being more skilled at helping customers find their dream pieces. But it also came from changing our
I
ranges,
was going to say.
beautifying the product more so that customers saw the value in it. There was many, many strategies that went into that one thing. But as we focused more on that, yes, we dropped off some customers at the lower end, and we had to be happy with that, and allow for that. But this was such a game changer that, really helped drive the business forward. And there was one more, and that was the gross profit margin. When 10 years ago, our GP margin for the jewelry industry in retail, and we have very high costs of rent and wages, was at 54%. And we got it to 64% over those 10 years. But in the last 3 years, we made the major jump. We went up about 5 to 6 points in the last 3 years. And that's what really led to the quantum leap, because it gave us some gap or some breathing room between the gross profit dollars that we were generating and the expenses, which actually allowed to have some profit at the end.
Yeah, how's that? That's changing your range, trying to increase average sale, which then impacts obviously customer lifetime value, is such a driver, in my opinion, these days for like, it's a simple metric, but it's a six, it's the only metric I think you can rely on to understand the growth of an organization. And you talk about changing your range to increase $70 to $250 purchases. That would have taken just as much debating as removing the sacred cows from your business and changing that range in order to lose customers but win the right ones. What was the change? Was it how much of it was it range versus how you portrayed the value of the range? Because I noticed that obviously your stores, the look and feel changed, but the photography of your products was definitely a key focal point for you.
Yes. So I think once you understand the underlying, three things that are going to drive the number one goal, and that for us was profitability. Once you have identified that and are so super clear, then the actions that support it become, very evident. And it's not just one thing. So then when you're, we want to raise the average sales. So what do we need to do with the team, the look and feel, the stores, the way that we merchandise it, the advertising or the photography that goes with it, how beautiful the products are, the packaging, everything goes to support that one major thrust of the business. And what for me, including GP percentage and the gross and the finance sales and the nose, they became, and of course the culture, I mean, that was just my bread and butter for every day. Those three things became the things that I was absolutely obsessed about. And so what we did was, we'd have meetings every week that despite all the whirlwind, what moves are we doing as an organization? Every person had to make a commitment in their area of domain of how they were going to increase and make steps forward in that one area that they owned. And I would go to every meeting of that because I knew if we were, if we had 300 people making action steps and commitments to moving the dial in their area, the rest was going to just fall out.
Got it. Got it. Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. You nailed it. It sounds simple, but those identify those metrics is it takes, like you said, it took receivership to get there. Michelle, so T1, transform yourself, T2, transform the team, T3, transform the outside. How are you now? We spoke earlier, you've started your own business now, founder and CEO of Complete Success. How are you now bringing these learnings from your time at Bevels to launch your new venture? Can you talk me through that? I'm sure there's a lot of people listening that would love to not just pick your brain, but definitely benefit and have you mentor them.
Well, thank you. I mean, as I said, in my passion, the whole time has always been about, helping people transform and have breakthroughs and really be the best version of themselves. And that was my ethos at Bevels. And now with the privilege of having, the sale to a global multinational last year, which was, an incredible moment for my family, for my team, and everyone involved, is to really help people who feel stuck, feel like, what I'm working so hard, but I'm not yet achieving the results that I know I'm capable of. Or maybe thinking, what else? What's next for me? Through the studying of these 10,000 hours over the last, 7 years, I discovered a code of transformation. It's a systematic code that's like reliable, it's repeatable, it's available for anyone who uses it and applies it. And so it's my passion to bring that code through Complete Success and help people have these breakthroughs, learn the code. So no matter what they want to change in their life, could be health, relationships, of course, their business, time and money freedom, because we want to be rich in those two. To be able to apply, to learn, increase their awareness of how it works, apply it in their life and achieve these results. And I do that through speaking and teaching, of course, through mentorship, coaching, and it's really just like my burning passion to help people live and create an amazing life that they absolutely love.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great product. I mean, mentoring is the one thing, in my opinion, that it's accelerated my career so much is speaking, like you even said it at the start of the call, living at the heels of those that you want to learn from. So it's a great initiative, Michelle. For those listening on the call, what is, out of everything we've spoken about, what is one skill that you think marketers in particular need to take away? Based on what we've discussed, what is that one skill or one takeaway?
I would say that it's really getting into the DNA of the brand so that, and if you can, the leader, because that amplifies it. And if you do that and get into the heart and soul, everything falls off it because you are so connected. to the customer, to the team who are exhibiting it, and every email, everything just comes from that genuine, authentic place.
Yeah, the DNA of a brand is so important. I think with all the channel proliferation and explosion of different mediums and devices, and you sometimes lose track of that, and you just go to trying to do the bare minimum or the best practice in that certain channel. Getting back to the DNA of the brand, like you said, in repositioning Bevels, it definitely was the first one of the key things you did. And it wouldn't be a marketing podcast without talking about buzzwords. What is your favorite buzzword for 2024, or worst? It can be either
Easy, empowered or empowerment.
empowered. How many times did we use that on this podcast? It's probably my favorite. I'm gonna go favorite buzzword.
It's my favorite, so
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much, Michelle. I mean, we could talk for another hour, but conscious, I've got to get on with the day, and other people probably want to, bite-sized podcasts. So this super insightful. Thank you for taking us through the journey of everything that happened, leading up to you becoming the CEO. Your first couple of years as feeling like as an imposter, and going through the challenges of running a business all the way through to getting this business in what was such a successful spot that it was probably hard to let go in the end. But your journey and your learnings is something I think a lot of people can benefit from. So thank you for sharing your story with us, and I wish you nothing but success and continue to be fabulous.
thank you, Billy. It's been a pleasure. And I hope that your viewers and you all have an amazing day.
Cheers. Thank you.
Bye.